is the Republican National Convention headed to Jacksonville? Good morning, and live from Studio 5, I'm Ann Schindler, sitting in for Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. And just ahead, we'll talk to the chairman of both the Duval Republican and Democratic parties about national media reports that Jacksonville is a leading contender on a short list of cities to host the Republican National Convention in August, if it moves out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Then later, we'll take a closer look at what bringing the convention here could mean for our city. But first this hour, the latest coronavirus numbers. Statewide, the Florida Department of Health has reported 67,371 cases of COVID-19, an increase of 1,371, and 2,765 deaths, an increase of 53. In Northeast Florida, there are now 2,845 cases and 104 deaths. Meanwhile, the push to possibly move the RNC comes after the governor of North Carolina, citing the coronavirus pandemic, asked for a scaled-back event in the scheduled host city of Charlotte. That sent the GOP looking for a different host city. Take a listen to what President Trump said yesterday.
And we'll see how it all works out, but the governor doesn't want to give an inch. And what he's doing is losing hundreds of millions of dollars for his state, but we'll probably have no other recourse but to move it to another state. We have a lot of states that want it, Texas, Georgia, Florida, many, many states that want it, but we've given them everything we can. North Carolina, special place, but I think we're going to probably end up giving you an announcement pretty soon.
And right now, all eyes are on Jacksonville. While there has been no official confirmation, an announcement is expected as soon as later today. Dean Black is chair of the Republican Party of Duval County, and he's on the line now with more. Welcome.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Doing great. It's a great day to be in Jacksonville.
So tell us today, what do you know about whether Jacksonville has been selected?
Well, we can't confirm anything yet, Ann, but we continue to reiterate through the Republican Party of Duval County that Jacksonville is the single best city in America to host this convention. And we are extremely, extremely optimistic.
Mm-hmm. And so it sounds as though the party has now voted to keep the basics of the convention in Charlotte under a contractual obligation, but move the speech and the celebration elsewhere. What would that entail? How many days? What would that mean if Jacksonville were to get that portion?
Well, what that would mean is that, for all intents and purposes, the grand spectacle of what the population of America commonly perceives as the convention itself would be here. And it would be the greatest event to come to Jacksonville since the Super Bowl.
Is that a multi-day spectacle?
One would expect so, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when will a decision be announced?
Very, very soon.
Shall I be watching Twitter like in the next couple hours or?
I will simply say very, very, very soon.
Gotcha. Okay. So I want to ask you a little bit. Mask wearing has become a little bit of a partisan issue in this country with some Republicans objecting to mandatory face masks. If Jacksonville gets a convention, would you want to see convention attendees required to wear face masks and social distance?
Well, that's really a question for planning and the Committee on Arrangements, and it is also a public health question, but even the CDC guidance doesn't mandate the wearing of masks. That's a decision, frankly, that will be made in light of better developed information and circumstances as you get closer to the actual event itself.
Mm-hmm. The city of Jacksonville, and the state really, has shown itself willing to sacrifice financially and otherwise to slow the spread of COVID-19. I know that we've heard from the local Republican Party that there's a significant economic impact that we could see from hosting this convention. But I wonder if the economic impact of this convention, which could draw as many as 50,000 people, is somehow different from the other sacrifices that the city and the state have been willing to make to slow the spread of that virus.
We are willing to make sacrifices, and we need to. But one thing that we must not do is simply close down our country. We simply cannot crawl in a hole and stay there forever. Our economy cannot cease to function If we persist in that mentality, the resulting inevitable famine would damage more people than the disease itself. And even as our economy cannot stop, and history cannot stop either, the Republican National Convention must go on. It is a part of our history. It is a momentous time in our nation's history, and that must proceed. The Democrats are free to do as they see fit. I believe that Joe Biden is probably going to stay in his basement, and they're going to host a webinar. They will decide what's best for them. The Republican Party and history marches on.
Mm-hmm. And you think that it would be best for Jacksonville?
No question about it. Unquestionably. This, like I said earlier, is the greatest event to come to Jacksonville since the Super Bowl. We have a downtown that's second to none. We have very efficient governance here. We have a strong business community. We can use the economic shot in the arm, if you will, at this difficult time in our economy. And it is an opportunity for us to showcase Jacksonville, for us to shine brightly statewide, nationally, and across the world.
Mm-hmm.
We are not just an average city. Jacksonville is a great city, the only city in America, a major city with unified Republican governance, and it shows.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a positive thing. And we would like to demonstrate to many of these other countries, or other cities rather, that are struggling with their governance, that there's a better way. And it's actually fairly easily achieved. Simply vote Republican.
I'm curious, you know, you say it's a downtown second to none. I mean, I've seen just a little bit of naysaying on Twitter just in terms of the city's physical appearance right now, having removed the landing, you know, being in the middle of taking down the Hart Bridge overpasses, that there might not be as much to do, or maybe it just might not be as visually appealing as it might have been in prior years. Do you have any concerns when you say showcasing Jacksonville for the nation about that?
Look, vibrant, growing cities like Jacksonville always show the evidence of progress and growth. That's not a negative thing. There's no highly functioning city in America that doesn't have something here or there under construction. That's perfectly normal. And of course, you know, before you have company at home, you straighten up the place a little bit. I'm sure there will be, you know, we will have some time for preparation, and we'll do that. We have a beautiful downtown. Our skyline is fabulous. We have the St. John's River. It's a great city and the single best city in the country to host the Grand Old Party Convention.
I want to ask you one other logistical question. It's hurricane season during a pandemic. If there was a need for evacuations, do you have any concern about how that might impact, obviously, the event? And then also, if there's no hotels available for residents who might be needing to evacuate or move a little bit inland?
Well, first of all, accommodations are going to be available. And secondly, Jacksonville has a demonstrated history of dealing responsibly with very difficult circumstances. And we don't shut the city down every time we have hurricane season. We would have months and months on end where we would shut the city down. Clearly, that would be ridiculous. We can't do that. And we have very responsible government. They will make responsible decisions. There will be adequate planning. They're putting a lot of staff work into this, and there will be immense resources brought to bear to assist Jacksonville in carrying out a fabulous and successful Republican National Convention.
And just in terms of the runway that we have to get ready for this event, about 75 days, do you borrow a game plan from Charlotte in terms of security planning, or do you just kind of start at ground zero and try to build?
Well, everything has to speed up. And some of the planning, because certain of the committee work and so on is remaining in Charlotte, will not have to be done. And so you're going to be planning a grand event on a concentrated timeline, and you won't have to plan everything from the ground up. Everyone will rise to the challenge. This is a This is a party that is accustomed to rising to great challenges. And this is a city that is accustomed to rising to great challenges, too. The light will be shining on Jacksonville, and we will all rise to that occasion. And by the way, Ann, this really shouldn't be a partisan issue. This is a great moment for Jacksonville to shine, and we should all be proud of our city. We should all be proud to host a national and international event where the sun will be shining on our city for the world to see.
Well, this is Dean Black. He's chair of the local Republican Party. Thanks for being with us so much. We appreciate it, and we'll watch for that announcement soon.
Very soon. Thanks, Ann.
Thank you. Have a good day. Well, we now go to Daniel Henry. He's the chairman of the Duval County Democratic Party for a different perspective. Welcome, Mr. Henry. Good morning. Mr. Henry, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Great. We're glad to have you. So you probably heard a little bit of what Mr. Black had to say. What are your thoughts on bringing the convention here now?
Well, first, I think it's almost a tale of two cities. One thing I think the president, the RNC, and the GOP are really looking forward to is putting on a show on the national stage so the president will have an opportunity to explain why he should be reelected for another 4 years. But one thing I think we need to ensure that the audience knows is that we shouldn't be recreating history. The only reason why the RNC is coming to Jacksonville is because the president and the RNC were unwilling to live up to some of the obligations that the state of North Carolina was asking them to do. And they're not crazy things that they're asking for. They're asking for social distancing. They're asking for a reduced size of the convention. And they're asking for attendants to be required to wear masks. And I don't blame them for wanting to ensure that everyone is safe, that they're following the precautions of the CDC, that no one is putting any people at risk for contracting the coronavirus. The CDC itself has said that there's potentially going to be another round of the virus this fall. Those were conditions that the RNC was unwilling to live up to. And now we find them showing up on our doorstep wanting to throw a big party and parade. And I respect Dean. We're friends. He has a job to do. But one thing I think needs to be addressed is the fact that the RNC is coming to Jacksonville. We still don't have precautions and guarantees that they're going to live up to the same conditions that the CDC has advised. We don't know what the cost benefit was going to be. I know people have said there's a $100 million impact, but no one can actually point to any kind of study that proves that. And most of the reports that have been thrown out there into the media have shown that the RNC is most likely to only be here 1 or 2 days. So these are the types of questions that need to be answered. These are the type of questions that the administration should be answering. And the last thing I try to point out, because I think Mr. Dean said this, we have a unified Republican government. We don't. I'd like to remind everyone that I'm a Missouri Democrat who's council president. But I say that to say that we're going into budget year where we're going to have tremendous financial strain on our revenue, on our reserves. We're still waiting on FEMA to reimburse us for Hurricane Irma expenses. I know that the administration and many people have said that the government is going to cover the cost for first responders and law enforcement and all the other logistics that come with the convention, but there's no telling when we eventually will receive those funds. So putting the city in a position where we have to use our reserves to cover these costs, at the same time we're most likely going to have to dip into them to cover expenses for essential services, I think is irresponsible. And we have to be honest when we have this discussion.
Well, Mr. Black said that, you know, should be a nonpartisan issue, that we should all celebrate having this event come to town. And it does seem that there would be some economic benefit from that. So what if this was the DNC that was looking at having the convention in Jacksonville?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. And I'm on record on saying that the DNC, as opposed to the RNC, is taking precautions for our convention that's coming up a week before the RNC. We're most likely either going to reduce the size of the people that are going to the convention, reduce the amount of days that the convention will be occurring, and the possibility of it being virtually. These are the things that I think parties, elected officials should responsibly take and consider when they're bringing over 50,000 people in one place at one time. And although the RNC is coming to Jacksonville, the DNC is not. What we have in front of us is the task at hand. And I know that we're all in a time of economic distress. People are hurting. Businesses are hurting. We want to ensure that not only are people able to recover from this virus, but they're able to recover from the economic impact that we've seen as a community and as a country. But one thing I will like to remind everyone is the fact that essential workers are the ones at the end of the day are going to have to not only be on the ground servicing the convention, working at the arena, being first responders, law enforcement. These are the individuals that ultimately are going to be putting their lives at risk in order for some kind of economic boon for the city. So before we kind of go down the road and say what great economic benefit this will be, I think we also have to consider that as a precaution, because our first responders at the end of the day will be on the front lines dealing with this, and we're putting them at risk for a giant party.
What do you think about in terms of the reception on the city's end? Do you think the city council should have any say in this convention coming to town? And what about the petition to stop it? Do you think that could have any impact?
I think people are making their voices heard on this issue. And frankly, if you see some of the comments that you see on social media, calls that are being made to their elected officials, it's not because they don't like Republicans, they don't like the president, although I'm sure they have those feelings. I think people are really and honestly concerned about the health risks, the financial risks. We're having a community discussion on race and police brutality. We're taking steps forward, like the monument's coming down, and that's great. And I commend those actions occurring. And I think we're finally at a moment and an inflection point where we as a community can actually heal. But one thing I think our leaders really need to consider are two things. First, this convention will be occurring at the very moment that city council and the mayor want to establish committees to really deal with the issues of race, community investment, and the budget. So just suppose that conversation at the same time the RNC and the president are in Jacksonville. I don't think you could realistically do both at the same time without people taking it seriously. That's the first point. And the second point is we've had this discussion about the RNC potentially being announced today, but no one has had any hearing in city council about the budgetary impact. No one's talked about whether our reserves will be tapped. No one's talked about the cost for the sheriff's office being pulled into Jacksonville. I know that there was a report on First Coast News with former Mayor Buckhorn of Tampa, who had the RNC there in 2012, talk about the need for the city to contract with dozens and dozens of law enforcement and first responder agencies in order for them to cover just the security of the city, and they had 2 years to plan for that. No one's had that discussion. I think we've kind of been hopped into the grand idea that the convention is coming to Jacksonville and the supposed economic boom, but I think responsible leaders, responsible government should also talk to the community candidly as to what the cost will be, because it will be expensive. We will have to make sacrifices in order for it to occur. And all we're asking for, frankly, in a nonpartisan way, is for our community to have that discussion and weigh the benefits of it. I think this decision should not simply be made by one person, and we should collectively as a community discuss these issues honestly, appropriately, weigh the benefit, and decide if it makes sense. That's what responsible government is, and that's what unified government is, in my opinion. Making decisions honestly and open.
Uh-huh. And you alluded earlier to the fact that there's a confluence of things happening right now. I mean, there's the pandemic, there's some economic issues, but there's also been some very significant protests throughout the country, but also here in Jacksonville. And as it happens that the convention would coincide here with the 60th anniversary of Axe Handle Saturday, which is a race riot basically that happened in Jacksonville, where a white mob attacked black peaceful protesters who were trying to integrate restaurants in downtown Jacksonville. I wonder, first of all, if you know of anything that's being done to commemorate that event, or whether that would pose any natural pinch point, I guess, between the convention and the protests that have already been occurring.
Yeah, I can't say for myself that I know that some kind of commemoration service will occur. I'm sure it will. But I'm glad you brought that up, Anne, because one thing I think is important for our audience to know is about the history of Jacksonville. This event happened over 60 years ago. It's a stain on our city, but we use this as a way for us to learn from history and for us to improve, to deal with the systematic racism that we saw 60 years ago and how we can progress as a city moving forward. But you're absolutely right. The potential to have the president doing a grand rally, accepting the nomination for the Republican National Convention at the same day as many white Ku Klux Klan members savagely beat many African Americans in Hemming Park, Mill added, on a very bloody and sad day in our city is truly troubling. I don't think anyone currently in the mayor's office administration has fully even addressed that issue and how you juxtapose those two events occurring at the same time. I know some city council members have mentioned it in one way or another, but that definitely needs to be part of the discussion. The last thing we want as a community, and frankly the community has shown their voice on this over and over again for the past 2 weeks. We've seen it in the streets. Saturday alone had reports have shown over 10,000 people showing up on the steps of the courthouse to demand action on these subjects. So to have an event like that, that is a 60-year commemoration of such a stain in our city, how on earth are we supposed to come together and heal with that type of convention occurring at the same time? You just can't. And it leads you to believe, and I'm sure they want a convention to highlight their party. That's perfectly fair, and that's their right to do so. But actions speak louder than words. And we can, on one hand, say that we want to be a community of healing and be in a place where we progress at the same time that, unfortunately, let's be honest, we have a racially diverse, the divisive president on our doorstep saying God knows what at that same time.
Daniel Henry, chairman of the Duval County Democratic Party, we thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Anne.
Yeah. We'll be right back, but first, a look at what the convention could mean for Jacksonville. And what do you think about all this? Please call us at 549-2937. Contact us on Twitter at First Coast Connect at WJCT.org and on Facebook. We'll get to some of your thoughts next.
Electro Lounge can now be heard Monday through Fridays at 10 p.m. till midnight and Saturdays from 9 to 11. Join us at the Electro Lounge only on 89.9 WJCT.
Introducing the Jacksonville Music Experience from WJCT, offering music lovers a variety of ways to enjoy favorite artists and discover new genres. Download the WJCT app or visit wjct.org/jacksmusic to start listening today.
Northeast Florida has its fingerprints all over the history of popular music, and contemporary local artists are making music that's reverberating across the country. But I've found, even with apps putting millions of songs into our pockets, it's hard to discover local music.
Can I get y'all to just bob your heads?
I'm Void Magazine editor Matt Shaw, and that's why I'm hosting the Voidcast, produced by WJCT. You'll hear from local artists and the people who lived local music history. WJCT.org/Voidcast. Before you leave.
Welcome back. So what would it mean for Jacksonville if the RNC does indeed come here, especially now during a pandemic? Joining us now with some perspective is Matthew Corrigan. He's the Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences at Jacksonville University and a longtime observer of politics in the city and the state. We also want to know what you think. Call us at 549-2937 to weigh in. Good morning, Matt. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Ann. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Great. So I wanted to just ask you your thoughts about the convention coming to town. You've probably heard what the prior two callers said. What do you think is the expectation, and are you hearing anything personally about whether this is a done deal?
I don't know if it's a done deal, but, you know, Jacksonville's been a real spotlight for both political parties over the last couple of decades. We had a very close election in terms of the votes last time with Trump and Clinton, and as Democrats have become more competitive on the presidential level in Jacksonville over the last 20 years or so, it's a spotlight. And so it makes sense electorally for a convention to come here because it's a close area, and what Republicans want to do is not only do well in Jacksonville, but they want to do really well in St. Johns County and other surrounding counties to offset all the votes in southeastern part of the state. So from a political standpoint, I can understand the choice.
And what do you think about our mayor? He seems to be enthusiastic. Why does the mayor want this convention here in town?
Yeah, well, I think Mayor Curry's had a long history with the Republican Party. He is a state party chair, and so I think that matters. And I think it's a chance to show off the city. Now, with that is it's a gamble because of all the issues that you've already talked about with COVID-19 and security issues. Obviously we've got lots of work to do in the city in terms of infrastructure and so forth. And so where are we going to get the money to put on this convention? So that's an important, I think, question to answer. If it goes well, it's a real feather in his cap. If it doesn't go as well, I think it probably hurts the reputation of the city and going forward. And so it is a gamble.
We're getting a lot of calls this morning, so I'd like to take a couple of them if I could. Mary on the west side, she is calling in to talk about the convention coming to town. Mary, good morning. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm concerned about two things that Mr. Corrigan just mentioned. The COVID-19, the president and his party don't really believe in the recommendations for even the face masks, let alone the distancing. And also, I'm aware that Jacksonville has a larger percentage of African Americans than other cities in Florida. I think it's in the low 20%. And I'm just concerned about the riots or the heavy protesting, even this side of rioting that could go on, and what might happen with trying to relocate or move out the peaceful protesters. Even I just find that with the president, who seems to not be too kind with his words toward people that have been suppressed in our history, I just am afraid of what might happen.
Thank you very much, Mary. Appreciate your comments. I'd like to go now to Ed in Clay County. He's got a comment about the RNC coming to Jacksonville. Good morning, Ed. Go ahead.
Yes, just a quick comment regarding the individual, the chairman of the Democratic Party, what he mentioned about that anniversary of that horrible event that happened decades ago, anti-black racist attack on members of our African-American community. What the chairman of the Democratic Party forgot to mention is that happened at the time when his party controlled the entire Jacksonville area and surrounding counties. So the responsibility of that was under his Democrat Party. The second part is that the concern about the convention coming over and COVID-19 based on the people who are participating in the RNC convention should be less of a worry that the protesters, who don't seem to follow social distancing or really even wearing a mask many times, because that's what we've been seeing on the current protests, the COVID-19 doesn't have enough a party affiliation.
Interesting. Yes, there's there has been a lot of concern about the protests spreading some contagion as well. That's true. I'd like to quickly go to Jack. He's calling from Intracoastal West. Also has some concerns about the health risk of a convention. Go ahead, Jack. Good morning.
Good morning. It just, with the fact that the, and that it seems like if the RNC moves here, it's not going to have any of the safeguards that, North Carolina or anywhere close to safeguards North Carolina is trying to put. I think it's going to be a real public health issue, and it could put a decent bit of the city at risk with such a high influx of citygoers. And I think that if the mayor tries to strong-arm this through like it seems like he is, I think it continues a pattern in which the mayor puts personal gain and political gain over the well-being of the citizens of the city. And I think if he pushes this through, it's important on every person in the city to really consider the mayor's position and whether or not he should be allowed to finish out his term and whether or not he should face a recall election. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Jack. Appreciate your comments. Matt Corgan, we're hearing obviously a lot of comments there focused on COVID, a little bit less on politics. Are you surprised by that?
No, I think it's the important issue of the day, and I think your next guest can, you know, give more perspective, but it looks like we're seeing some uptick in cases, and so obviously if that kept going for the next 2 months, then you do have an issue. And so, and another thing I think to keep in mind is this will be President Trump's show, and I don't think you may want to go back to FDR and the Democratic Party for a candidate who's had such a hold on his party. And so whatever's going to happen is what President Trump wants to happen. And so, you know, I think that puts a whole different dynamic to it. And you know, they've shown in Washington sometimes that they may, you know, downplay some of the health risks. And so will that happen here as well? I'd also say, you know, it's a real opportunity over the next 2 months for the city to deal with some of the issues that have been brought forth in the last week, because you're absolutely right. There's going to be a real spotlight is probably a better word on Jacksonville in terms of, you know, what type of city we are. And this new city council committee that's, you know, working on social justice issues, I know it's only 2 months, but I think, again, this, you know, you could use this as an impetus for some changes, because you want to show a good face to the world, and you will have worldwide recognition at this point. And the question is, what type of recognition do we want?
Interesting. So it could sort of be an animating effect for the city to change even further. You mentioned that we were going to hear from another voice, Chad Nielsen. He's the Director of Accreditation and Infection Prevention at UF Health Jacksonville. Good morning, Chad. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we appreciate you being on. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the intersection of COVID and the concerns about possibly bringing a convention to the city. Maybe you could just talk about cases. Right now, they seem to be rising quickly, or is it reopening? I wonder if you have any sense as to why we're seeing some increase recently.
Yeah, so it's actually a little bit convoluted, right? So the state of Florida has been seeing a slight increase in the percent positivity over the last several weeks. So, you know, of the numbers of people who are being tested, which have been increasing, we've been increasing testing, those coming back positive has increased over the last 3 weeks. I think we're starting to flatline again as a state. Duval County actually has been on the decline for percent positivity, which indicates that, you know, we are moving in the right direction here. You know, however, you know, anytime you have these large gatherings of people, whether it's a mega church gathering or, you know, a convention or a rally, you do have that risk that whatever COVID-19 is floating around in that population could transmit easily. I mean, just as late as late April, a mega church gathering in California, about 3,500 folks in the crowd resulted in about 71 additional cases after that. So there's always that risk with these large gatherings, and I think that the Trump rally next week is going to be a big litmus test for what this is going to look like and how Florida should prepare for this if it in fact comes here.
Is there any way to look at a rally like that and then sort of game out whether the risk that could be seen is being seen? Do you have any way to look at an event like that and gauge whether something similar in this city would carry that risk?
Yeah, I mean, there are certainly some ways, but as Matt, you know, has said eloquently, you know, this is sort of Trump's thing, and what he says goes. And so for public health practitioners, we would generally say, well, let's check temperatures at the door. Let's, you know, try and filter out the people who are symptomatic and things like that. Those are pretty typical and real classic epidemiological ways to ensure we're not introducing sick folks into these crowds. And then what you do on the back end is anybody who did come back positive after that kind of event, you know, you do some contact tracing, you ask them where they've been, and then you can really kind of see, okay, well, 3,500 people went to this rally and only three came back, you know, sick from COVID-19, then maybe that's no different than what is already floating in the population, and that was a success. But that's hard to do that if typical public health, you know, interventions are not allowed to happen.
I'd like to go now to Richard from Lakewood. I believe he's the one who actually started the petition to oppose the RNC coming to Jacksonville. Good morning, Richard. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the petition that you started, how many signatures it's garnered, and what your goal is.
Well, we've got about 13,500, and we went up about 7,500 since yesterday, actually. I've been getting a lot of great comments. A lot of people are concerned like I am. As I said on Melissa's show and on other places, I've been through different events. I put on giant concerts and events that was in demonstrations in 1968 and saw cities that were destroyed from violence. And violence comes on all sides of the thing when you have a convention with opposing radical opinions. And I love the city, and I would hate to see anything happen to it. That was my reason for starting the petition. And also, with 10 weeks to go for a convention, there's really been no preparation yet at all in the city of Jacksonville for the event, for the venue, and anything. And it takes a lot longer than that to safely put an event together of this size and of this magnitude. Mm-hmm. Between the virus and the possibility of, we're a concentrated area in downtown area. It isn't like in Orlando where everything's spread out. If you concentrate everything in one area with possibly hundreds of thousands of people coming with conflicting opinions, it's just a perfect storm, and you wouldn't invite a hurricane into your city. You know, that's been my opinion, and I'm trying to bring some wisdom from my years of experience in large events. And I wish the city could make some money, but I know this could cost a lot more time, lives, money, and just change the city for a long time that I don't think would be helpful for us or for the economy of our area.
Thank you, Richard. I appreciate your input there. I'm going to take a quick call here from Jimmy on the West Side. Good morning, Jimmy. What are your thoughts about the convention coming to Jacksonville?
Good morning, Ann. Well, I have a number of thoughts. If this were 2024 and COVID was under control and there was the adequate opportunity to plan, I would love to see the Democratic or the Republican convention in Jacksonville. But the reality is that's not what we're facing here. And it's important to get the terms right, I think, and make sure that we're all talking about the same thing. The RNC voted to keep a scaled-down convention in Charlotte already because of their contractual obligations. So most of the delegates and the economic impact is still going to stay in Charlotte. So what we'd get here in Jacksonville is essentially a Trump rally, a glorified Trump rally, which brings no economic upside to Jacksonville, but with, as your guest was just saying, tremendous attendant cost with the potential for wide-scale protest in Jacksonville. So it's all downside from my perspective, and I think we should resist it.
All right. Thanks, Jimmy. I appreciate your thoughts. Matt Corgan, I'd like to just ask you to to say what your thoughts are about, I mean, the convention obviously has an economic impact. It also has some political muscle behind it for the people who bring it. And there's some perils. So I wonder what your feeling is about how this might impact for the party going forward, assuming that it is a successful event. What would it mean for the president? What would it mean for the Republican Party in Florida?
Well, I think in terms of the party, it's been taken over really by Donald Trump. And it's not just a Trump phenomenon. You know, I think parties in general have gotten weaker institutionally through the decades. And so this is, you know, again, what is the message that's going to come from the convention? And that's going to be really controlled by the president. And, you know, he hasn't shown a real capacity to have a lot of nuance in his speeches. And so, I think it will be a typical kind of Trump rally. It's a good question. You know, are the delegates going to come here? And, you know, if they've had to go to Charlotte to do things and then come here, you know, what is that economic impact? But, you know, I'm torn as a educator. You know, I'm teaching a class in parties and elections this fall. It's, you know, it's a great opportunity to witness American history, but the questions about security and the health of the people coming and the health of the people in Jacksonville need to be answered.
Well, Matthew Corrigan, Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences at Jacksonville University, and Chad Nielsen, Director of Accreditation and Infection Prevention at UF Health in Jacksonville. Thank you both so much for being a part of the conversation this morning. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Hungary and Penn, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering picnic meals in a safe, dog-friendly farm setting where social distancing is top priority. Visit congaryandpenn.com for more information. One Florida Clinical Research Consortium is looking for essential workers in healthcare to join the HERO Registry and help researchers at the University of Florida and nationwide understand what their experience is like on the front lines of COVID-19. Nurses, food service workers, respiratory therapists, environmental service workers, long-term care facility workers, emergency responders, and other clinical and non-clinical personnel can join online at heroesresearch.org.
Classical 24 brings listeners beautiful music from around the world, featuring the best of classical music from the all-time greats to the newest composers and performances. Download the WJCT app or visit wjct.org/jacksmusic to start listening today.
This time last year, more than 43 million Americans hit the roads, rode the rails, and took to the sky. But this summer, we're going to need more than sunscreen to stay safe. I'm Celeste Headlee. As the mercury rises, what are the good options for those ready to travel, and what are the bad ones? We'll find out on the next 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, I'm John Lansing, NPR's CEO. We work with hundreds of local stations across the U.S., including this one, to bring you the most impartial, honest, and trustworthy news we can. It doesn't start with me, or at NPR, or even at this station. It all begins with one person, you. Be a pillar of support for this station. Please donate today.
Become a WJCT sustainer today. Go to wjct.org/radio, and thank you.
Welcome back. Jacksonville's Edward Waters College will hold a virtual event called Where Do We Go From Here? A Community Conversation Towards Action, this evening at 6 p.m. It's part of Stay Woke, the Edward Waters College President's Distinguished Speaker Series, and will be hosted by Zachary Faison. He's the president and CEO of Edward Waters College, and he's on the line now with a preview. Good morning, Mr. Faison. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. How are you this morning?
Very good. Thank you. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about what this speaker series tonight is going to focus on.
Sure, sure. Well, as you mentioned, this is a part of a really a larger collective series that was started at the institution about 2 years ago. And so the series really intends to kind of create a platform for our entire community to hear and engage with the wildly diverse and accomplished, distinctive, you know, cadre of speakers. And so the series tonight, the edition tonight, really is going to feature a sampling of Jacksonville area African-American leaders and influencers, really from a cross-section of our community, from law enforcement to representatives of our Jacksonville corporate sector, from distinguished clergy and faith leaders to stalwart local Jacksonville civil rights activists to young people. Some of our student leadership are going to be represented. Mm-hmm. To really have some conversation around really centering the voices of African-American males in particular in wake of all of the upheaval and tragedy that has befallen largely African-American men at the hands of law enforcement. And so, you know, tonight, you know, we're really looking to have a conversation around the engagement of, in particular, African-American males and law enforcement. And we're really looking forward to having some fruitful conversation towards that end.
Mm-hmm. And as you say, this is part of a series that's been ongoing, but I would guess that just in the last week or so, the subject and the tenor of the conversation has probably changed rather significantly.
It has. It has. You know, typically, you know, our series are held throughout the academic year. But in kind of as we, of course, as citizens of Jacksonville and citizens of our larger community, we're witnessing all of the upheaval. We thought it prudent that we have this very special iteration of the series now, because I think the community needs it. Our citizens need it, and the folks in our EWC community need to have an opportunity to give voice to what we see going on around us.
And so how can people participate in this? Is this a kind of thing where the community can weigh in, or is it just something that they listen to and watch? How do people participate?
Well, absolutely. We definitely want for the community not only to watch, but to be engaged. So tonight on the Edward Waters College Facebook Live page, we will, of course, be doing this virtually as we're in the midst of the pandemic, but persons that are wanting to be a part can watch live on the Facebook Live page. I also believe that WJCT is going to also kind of cross broadcast it as well. And what we are doing is we're asking persons that are watching to email us at staywoke, STAYWOKE, awoke at ewc.edu. They can email their questions while the panel discussion is going on, and we will be taking those questions live this evening at 6 o'clock p.m.
And about how many participants are on the panel tonight? It looked like a great list of names.
Yeah, we have a great panel. We have about 12 persons that are participating. Just on yesterday, we got a late edition of Congressman Al Lawson that will be joining us. Former Sheriff Nat Glover, who also was my predecessor as the leader of Edward Waters College. Presiding bishop, excuse me, of the African Methodist Episcopal Church, who also shares as the chairman of the Board of Trustees, will be joining us. We have some student leaders, Dr. Richard Danford, who is the president and CEO of the Jacksonville Urban League. So just a really, really, really fine collection. Dr. Charles Moreland, who is the director of community affairs out of the mayor's office, will be joining us. Mr. Rodney Hurst, a longtime civil rights activist in the Jacksonville community, will also be joining us. So just a really, really, really wide swath, a good cross-section of the community, hopefully, for some really needed conversation.
Okay. Well, I'd like to mention that event will be live-streamed on the WJCT Facebook page at 6 p.m. tonight. And as you said, you can submit questions to the panel if you email staywoke@ewc.edu. This is Zachary Faison, President and CEO of Edward Waters College. Thanks so much for being with me this morning.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much for having me.
And that's our program. I'm going to send it over to Station Director David Luckin. He's going to talk a little bit about contributing to the station. I'll tell you, David, that yesterday my folks were listening to the show remotely and from out of state, and they made a pledge. So just wanted to let you know that you're getting contributions from outside the area as well.
And don't we love that? Often we have snowbirds and other folks who are just traveling through who have pledged our station. We've had truckers come through, Ann, who have pledged stations all across the I-10 from our city to the West Coast. So thanks to your folks. Thank you for a great program today, too. Now it's your turn to put your voice on this radio station by giving us a call at 353-9528 and show your financial support for what an excellent program this is. It's kind of an open mic program for the community to talk to the movers and shakers of our community. And that's what it's all about, including you, because it's all about you. We are here for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, whether we're playing music or we're playing the news. We are here. You count on us. We're counting on you now to give us a quick call at 353-9528. You can call our toll-free number at 1-800-722-9528 or anytime at all online at wjct.org. And of course, we accept Visa, MasterCard, American Express, or Discover. Become a sustainer. Just $10 a month comes out of your account. You don't even know it's gone. It helps us pay for all the great programming. 353-9528 is the number you should call to participate in this, your public radio station. We can't be here without you, and we realize these are extraordinary times. So if you don't have the funds, that's okay. Enjoy the listen. If you do, give us a call at 353-9528. And thank you so much for everyone who's called this morning. We do appreciate it.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.